William's goodbye present.
Uncle Paul's going back to Australia tomorrow, said Hubert Lane. I'm going to see him off at Hadley Station. He says he'll call round and say goodbye to you on the way.
All right, said William amicably. There had been a lull in the hostilities between the Hubert Laneites and the outlaws during the visit of Hubert's Uncle Paul from Australia. For Uncle Paul was an uncle after the outlaw's own heart, and he evidently much preferred the outlaws to his own nephew and his nephew's friends. To William, the visit opened up whole new worlds of adventure, and he had proved an apt pupil at whistle and boat-making. In fact, Uncle Paul had said that the last boat William had made was almost as good as he could have made himself.
Now, what you want, he said, is a good knife. I'll give you one before I go. I'll get you one like mine if I can.
Like yours? Gasped William incredulously.
Yes, said Uncle Paul, glancing carelessly at the magnificent weapon with which he had just fashioned a perfectly formed and perfectly balanced boat. Those little penknives of yours are no good.
The next day, he had said,
I've not forgotten that clasp knife of yours. I went into Hadley about it, and they hadn't one in stock, but they're going to get one.
On the last morning of Uncle Paul's visit, William was hanging about his front gate when the car containing Uncle Paul and Hubert came down the road on its way to Hadley Station. Uncle Paul stopped the car and jumped out.
I was just coming to see you to say goodbye, he said to William. Ah, we've had a great time together, haven't we? Now, don't forget what I told you about lighting fires, and when you're tracking down wild animals, be sure you're the right way of the wind, or they'll get your scent. Oh, and about your knife.
Yes, said William eagerly.
They said they'd have it in first thing this morning, so I'll stop the car at the shop in Hadley and get it, and Hubert here can bring it back to you. That'll be all right, won't it?
Oh, yes, agreed William heartily, and I'm jolly grateful to you. I've wanted a knife like that all my life.
Ah, splendid, said Uncle Paul. I'm giving Hubert a pistol for his present. Well, goodbye. See you again next time I'm over.
He drove off, Hubert sitting beside him with a faint secret smile on his face. William's sorrow at the departure of Uncle Paul was mingled with joy at the prospect of the possession of the magnificent clasp knife. But the morning passed by, and Hubert did not appear with the clasp knife. After lunch, William could restrain his impatience no longer and set out for the Lane's house. Mrs. Lane greeted him without enthusiasm. She was tired of seeing him about the place. Paul had encouraged him too much.
Well, she said coldly, what do you want?
I've come for my knife, said William simply.
Your what? She said.
My knife. The knife that Hubert's Uncle Paul's given Hubert for me.
I don't know what you're talking about. Hubert had a knife that his Uncle Paul gave him for a parting present, but I know nothing about any knife of yours. Hubert? She called.
Hubert came slowly into the hall. His fat, pale face still wore the faint smile.
I've come for my knife, said William sternly.
The smile spread all over Hubert's fat, pale face.
What knife? He said.
Well, the knife Uncle Paul said he was giving you for me. Hubert took from his pocket an exact but shiningly new replica of Uncle Paul's clasp knife.
Yes, that's it, said William eagerly.
But Hubert did not at once hand it over with apologies for the delay. Instead, he slipped it back into his pocket with a careless air of proprietorship.
That's my knife, he said. He gave it me for a goodbye present.
He said he was giving you a pistol for a goodbye present, said William indignantly. Hubert took out a shining new pistol from another pocket.
Yes, he gave me that too.
William gazed at him blankly.
But he promised the knife to me. You were there when he did. He said he'd call at the shop for it and give it to you to give to me.
He never did. He never said anything about a knife when he called to say goodbye to you. He gave this knife to me, that's all I know.
William was, for a moment, struck speechless with horror. He turned indignantly to Mrs. Lane.
It is my knife, he said. Uncle Paul told me he was going to give it to me. He was going to call for it in Hadley this morning and give it to Hubert to give to me. He told me so. Hubert was there when he told me so.
Mrs. Lane looked at Hubert.
Did he, Hubert?
Hubert met her eye blandly.
Course he didn't. He's just making it all up to get the clasp knife off me.
William stared at him.
You naughty boy, Mrs. Lane was saying. How dare you come here with a string of lies like this?
But he did, said William desperately.
Be quiet. Go away at once, William Brown.
William knew that further protestation would be useless. Stunned and bewildered, he walked gloomily to the old barn, where he'd arranged to meet the outlaws to show them his precious new possession. As soon as they saw him, they knew that something was wrong. Not thus, slowly, dejectedly, thoughtfully, does the owner of a brand new clasp knife walk.
"Haven't you got it?" called Ginger as he approached.
"No," said William.
"Oh, never mind," said Ginger. "I bet it'll have come before tonight."
"Oh, it's come," said William bitterly. "It's come all right." They stared at him in astonishment.
Why wasn't he swaggering, then? Why wasn't he displaying it?
"Where is it, then?" demanded Douglas.
"He's got it," said William.
"Who?"
"Hubert Lane," said William, spitting the name out as if it were some noxious draught.
They crowded round him in consternation as he told them the whole story. Hubert, of course, had no real use for the clasp knife. He was definitely not a clasp knife boy. He'd taken so much trouble to obtain it only because William wanted it, and he wanted to score off William. The pleasure he got out of it was in hanging out of his bedroom window, safe from attack, and displaying it to William and the outlaws with jeering triumph whenever they passed down the road in front of his house. It was just when William had almost given up hope of either getting back his knife or avenging the insult that an idea occurred to him. He remembered, quite suddenly, the weak spot in Hubert's armour. Hubert still believed in fairies and witches and spells. There'd been an historic occasion when he'd even managed to persuade Hubert that he'd been made invisible. Surely that weakness could be turned to account now. He called a meeting of the outlaws in the old barn, and together they formed a plan. The next morning, William and Ginger stood in the road in front of the Lane's house. William, assuming a nauseating, pleasant expression, called up to Hubert's window.
"Will you come out and play with us, Hubert?"
Hubert appeared at his bedroom window. Ginger imitated William's nauseous expression.
"Come and play with us, Hubert," pleaded Ginger. "It's all right. We've got a secret. We've not told anyone else yet. We'll tell you if you'll come."
Next to greed, Hubert's consuming passion was curiosity. They knew that he would now have no peace of mind till he had learnt the secret.
"All right," he said condescendingly. "I'll come along."
He vanished from the window and soon appeared at the gate.
"It's all right about that knife, Hubert," said William. "You can keep it."
"Thought you'd feel that way,"
said Hubert with an unpleasant sneer. He took out the knife from one pocket, the pistol from another, flourished them carelessly, then restored them to his pockets. The two outlaws restrained themselves. They walked together until they reached the field by the old barn. William and Ginger led Hubert across the stile into the field.
"Well," said Hubert, "what's this secret of yours?"
"It's this," said William, lowering his voice. "When we came here this morning, we saw an old woman in the field with a cloak and a big pointed hat and a broomstick." The superior sneer fell from Hubert's face.
"It was a witch. It was a witch, of course. What was she doing?"
"She was just going about and waving her broomstick and saying things."
"Spells," said Hubert, his round, credulous face pink with eagerness. "She was making spells. I say,"
his eyes glinted greedily,
"did she say anything about finding treasure or anything like that?"
Walking by his side, William carefully led Hubert onto a spot that had recently been burnt brown by one of the outlaws' campfires.
"She said something over that bit you're walking on now," he said reflectively. "What was it?" said Hubert.
"Well, it went something like this," said William. "Whoever treads upon this bit of burned, into a hen coop shall his home be turned." And then it went on something about all the family that was in the house should be turned into hens, and anyone of the family who wasn't in it when the spell came on should be turned into hens the minute they saw the hen coop.
Hubert's mouth dropped open, and he leapt quickly away from the patch of burnt grass. "What? A hen coop?"
Yes, said William, "but I don't suppose there's really anything in it. Go and look if your house is turned into a hen coop. You can see it from the stile, can't you?"
Hubert started forward, then remembered the second part of the spell, and returned.
I better not, he said anxiously. "You go and look," he added, turning to Ginger.
Ginger went down to the stile, from which he could see the solid four-square structure of stone and brick that was the Lane's house.
"Crumbs!" he shouted in well-simulated horror. "It's gone! There's only a hen coop!"
Hubert paled.
"I don't believe you. I don't believe you."
"Well, come and look for yourself,"
challenged Ginger. Again, Hubert remembered the latter part of the spell and shook his head.
"No, I won't," he said. "You want to get me turned into a hen, that's what you want. Anyway, I don't believe you."
"Well, come and look for yourself if you don't believe me."
"No, I won't."
Matters having thus reached a deadlock, Douglas appeared, sauntering idly from behind the old barn.
"I say, Hubert," said Douglas airily, "what's happened to your house?"
"What?"
"It's gone. I've just passed it now, and it's gone, and there's a hen coop where it was, with a brown and white hen scratching about outside it."
That was a clever touch of verisimilitude on Douglas's part. He had seen Mrs. Lane through the window, and she'd been wearing a brown and white dress.
"Oh, corks! That'll be Mother," said Hubert.
"I say, there's a hen just setting off from the coop and going down the road," called Ginger from the stile.
"Oh, that'll be Father," moaned Hubert. "He goes to the station about this time."
"I bet they won't let him on the train," said Ginger. "Not like that."
Henry appeared suddenly in the road and vaulted the stile.
"I say," he said, "Hubert's house has gone. There's just a hen coop there."
At this proof from yet another independent source, Hubert burst into tears. They crowded round, comforting him.
"Don't worry, Hubert, they have quite a good time, hens. You'll get to like worms and grubs after a bit, I expect. You'd better go back and get turned into one now and get it over. You'll get used to it.
I expect you're hungry, aren't you, Hubert? You better go home and have some nice grubs and worms.
I bet you'll get a bit tired at first having to sleep on one leg, Hubert, but it won't seem so bad after a year or two. I believe he's turning into one now, don't you? His face is getting just like a hen's."
Hubert's sobs turned into long howls.
I don't want to be a hen. I don't want to be a hen."
"Well, listen, Hubert," said William kindly. "I heard this witch say something else after she'd said about the hens."
"What did she say?"
"Well, she went over to the stream here, and she waved her broomstick over it, and she said, 'And never shall he be free of the spell till he throws into here something that cuts and something that shoots as well.'" Hubert blinked and considered. Then he plunged his hand into his pocket and brought out the clasp knife.
"Do you think that'd do?"
William examined it with a judicial air.
It might. It cuts, anyway. No harm in trying. But what about the other? She said something that shoots as well.
From another pocket, Hubert brought out his pistol.
"What about this? Would this do?"
You might try. Try throwing them both in together."
Pistol and penknife fell with a splash into the little stream.
At once, Ginger raised a cry from the stile. "I say, Hubert's house has come back. The hen coop's gone and Hubert's house has come back."
Hubert's fat, tear-stained face shone with relief.
"I say, I don't look as if I was turning into a hen now, do I?"
No, William reassured him. "You've gone quite back to a boy again now." Cautiously, fearfully, Hubert approached the stile. Then he gave a whoop of joy.
"It's come back! It's all right! It's come back!"
And he set off at his fat, slow trot down the road towards the house. The next morning, as he was standing at the gate, the outlaws passed him. William held the clasp knife and Ginger the pistol. Neither had been damaged by its brief immersion in the stream. Hubert looked at them with interest.
"Where did you get those?" he said.
William turned a bland, expressionless face to him.
"The fairies gave them us," he said.